This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Radio, and I'm sitting down this afternoon with Jim Waller, our county planner for Johnson County. Good afternoon, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good. Very nice of you to spend some time with us. So I wanted to talk to you about planning and growth in the county, because I think we're aware that there's been a lot of growth going on, and it's clear our county is still growing. And if you've been trying to buy or rent a home recently, the market has been incredibly competitive and prices have gone up considerably, although it may be cooling off a little bit now. But before we talk about maybe some of the more general challenges of growth, there were a couple of questions I wanted to ask you, just so that you, for the record, as the county planner, the guy who knows, could you just fill us in on the status of a couple of developments that people may have heard talk about over recent months? And firstly, there was some talk about a big subdivision going on the north end of town. Some people may have heard it referred to as the Mathers Peak subdivision. What is the status on that? Is it going ahead? What's the deal?
It's done. It's dead in the water. So the county did receive a sketch plan and processed the sketch plan, and allowed the developer to pursue the next layer of subdividing. They were also instructed that the location fell into a territorial review of subdivisions, which means the city of Buffalo gets to approve that subdivision as well. So when you think about it, it was about a six-step process, and we were only at step one. And they were allowed 12 months to get to step two. They didn't get it done.
Okay, so thank you. So that clears that up for us. That north end of town subdivision is no longer a deal that's going through, and it's paused, if not completely stopped for now. The developer is not pursuing it.
Okay. For now.
Thank you.
I think they will see something in the future, but today, okay, nothing.
Thank you. And then secondly, there is a minor subdivision on the Trabing Road, which I believe the Johnson County Commissioners have recently approved. I think some people have heard of it as the Yoder minor subdivision. Can you tell us what that is and what is proposed?
Well, it was approved yesterday, so it did move through the county process and got finalized. The developer, well, the landowner, Daniel Yoder, their engineer picked it up.
Okay.
And the plat will probably
so
be recorded.
What is it? What are they going to do?
It was a one-lot subdivision that was 12.77 acres, and basically they owned 50 acres, and they wanted to sell off, break off, whatever you want to call it, 10-plus acres for their daughter. And because it didn't qualify for family exemption under Wyoming's law, they had to go through the subdivision process. So that's what they did. I never would have guessed that it would have been as controversial. There's a lot of things that were going on that the county can't address with that property. It's where the store is, so if you're familiar with the Yoder Country Store, that's what they were doing. I think in any other year, if the legislature had not changed the state law, it would have been a family exemption and it wouldn't have been a subdivision. We wouldn't have even been talking about it.
Okay. So what is, we use the word minor subdivision, is there planned to be a lot of new homes built on that property? It's just a one. Okay.
Yep.
So thank you again.
So it was the store and that's it on that property. I think as far as the subdivision, the minor subdivision process allows basically landowners to create 1 to 5 lots, have very minimal regulations to do that. This is just in an area that, you know, there was covenants, there was neighbors, it's change, and I think that's what caused a lot of the confusion. But for the most part, I don't think you're going to see any change out there in terms of what's happening on that specific property.
Okay. Well, thank you from the guy who knows, thank you for clearing up any confusion or misunderstandings about that. And you raised some, my questions also raised some more general issues, which I'd like to spend some time visiting with you about. Johnson County has definitely experienced an influx of new residents. I've heard you describe this, Jim, as the phenomenon of the second homesteading. So growth is something which we, it's the G word, isn't it? We talk about growth a lot and how we're going to cope with it, what we're going to do, how do we manage that, what do we want? So let's just look at what you know, because you're the guy who sees what's really happening on a day-to-day basis. We see a lot of new residents here in Johnson County. Where do you think they've come from? And are they working? Are they older? What do they do? What demographics do they represent? Who are these new people we've welcomed to Johnson County?
Well, thank you for that question. That's a big one. I have said kind of a second homesteading, and it's because I'm looking at the land and thinking 100 years ago, you know, homesteaders and people came into Wyoming and Johnson County acquiring large blocks of land that they would develop, put into agricultural use, and move on. And what I'm seeing today is those large blocks of agricultural land are getting split up into smaller blocks of agricultural land, and lots of people are eyeing those smaller pieces, and they're seeing them favorable to build a house and have, you know, a little piece of Wyoming. So 120, 130 years ago, the idea was homesteading. You know, people acquired 40 acres, you know, maybe all the way up to 320 acres, depending on where the entry for homestead was, which county, which state or territory had a lot to play into it. Congress had different laws that applied to homesteading, so some were grazing homesteads, some were agricultural, you know, crop and things like that. There's also homesteads that were done for mining. So there's places like the Black Hills. Those were homesteads for mining. And so when I say a second homestead, the idea is I'm watching people migrate across our country, and nobody wants to talk about migration, but we're watching migration happen. And I think we've got people moving from one side of the country and they're stopping here. And they're like, ah, I can get my own little piece of heaven.
Do you think they're coming from
everywhere?
East? Oh, they're coming from everywhere. So what is it about Wyoming that makes it attractive? Obviously, we have our beautiful mountains and, you know, the clean air, the lack of population, the remoteness can be very appealing for some people. But what is it specifically about Wyoming that...
All of the above. I think it's a mixture of property rights. I think it's a mixture of, there's lots of Hollywood shows that have been recently out, and they kind of depict things about places in Wyoming or places around Wyoming, because certainly Montana and Idaho and Utah are growing much faster, but we're the smallest state, so we only, you know,
in terms of population,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think, so the growth we see is big. Because we're so small. You know, if you have two people and all of a sudden it goes to four, that's
so
double.
We feel the intensity of more people. So what do you know about the people who've been moving in recently?
That's a hard one because, you know, I've always said it'd be kind of fun to know more about how people are changing in society, how they're moving from point A to point B. That drive, you know, when you think about homesteading and you look backwards, the Oregon Trail, no one's ever really asked, why was there a big push for people to go from Missouri to Oregon? Oregon was giving away land. It was free. So people knew there was this free land. So they flocked. And I think you look, they left maybe Europe and came to America, migrated across. They set up to have something that they didn't have where they lived in Europe. Maybe a house, maybe a farm, maybe growing some crops and having some animals. And this is back in the 1800s, of course, but we put it today in 2022, it's no different.
And I think there's a perception of people who were living in areas that were more densely populated and the value of the property that they had there compared to, which has allowed them to buy something maybe much larger with land, maybe they didn't have land before, outside of a really densely populated area. You know, those things can really appeal to people. And one of the changes that COVID brought about was a change to many people's working lives. And you don't have to go to work in a particular place anymore. Maybe telecommuting has a teleworking has a an aspect to play in that too.
I think a little bit minor probably here because the age of the people coming here, it's definitely older.
Okay. When you say older, what do you mean? Everybody older than me is old.
Retirees.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's you can't really go in and put like a figure and say, yep, but you know, go to the grocery store and look around. They're older. And I think the commonality of what I hear in my office is we're going to be retiring soon and we're going to be moving there. And you look at the caller ID on the phone and it's an out-of-state area code. That's been a reoccurring thing that's happened for 20 years. One thing that I've noted different probably in the last, I want to say probably 12 years, just in Wyoming in general, more people associate with the cowboy life. And I think there's a pop percentage of our population that was in love with John Wayne. And they were like, man, the cowboys. And so then they put this thought in their mind, like they were going to come and live in the cowboy state, in the cowboy way, or the cowboy life. And so may have lived somewhere, you know, maybe the East Coast or the West Coast their entire lives. But they had this thought and this vision about living in Wyoming, whether it was maybe a trip to Yellowstone or Grand Teton National Park when they were a young person. And that stuck in their mind and they always wanted to come back. Maybe they visited one of our small communities that's, you know, just adorable. And they were like, that stuck in their mind and they always had it in the back of their mind, I'm going to move to this state and live here someday. So that is why I say it's like a second homesteading. People are now getting to the point where they can identify, I want to go there. And they're at the end of their working life, so they're able to come. So demographically, we've got some data that supports the aging population. The median age of Johnson County, I think, is 47 to 48 years old today. And that means equally the same number of people on this side of 47, 48, and the same number of people on this side of 47 and 48. And in the nation, it's not 47 to 48. It's like 35 to 36.
Okay.
Wyoming.
Skewed younger.
Yes, and that's Johnson County.
Okay.
Wyoming is not as high as Johnson County.
So we're saying that we think our, well, we know that our population is older.
And growing.
And growing older, not only by people getting older, of course, but more older.
Older people.
More older people coming in. And so what is it? So we, the lack of regulation, you mentioned that, the lack of regulation, are these people coming in and building their own homes or are they coming in and moving into existing homes and some people are moving out?
I see some of both. I see people moving and acquiring, you know, somebody coming in and acquiring their house and then the citizen here locally is now able to go buy something bigger, buy something newer. Maybe in the county, maybe it's a new house in town that was recently constructed. I'm seeing that definitely happen. I think you have the political mess going on and affecting people moving here. And I use that lightly because I like to think that Wyoming is a big community and political. Sometimes we get caught up in that, but we can see past it. at least in our state and locally. But I think in the bigger communities, and everybody's bigger than Wyoming. We're the smallest. We're number 50. So everybody's bigger than us. Mm-hmm. And I think...
You're speaking again in population
terms.
Because our land mass is big.
Yeah, but we can only populate and occupy on 48% of Wyoming. Okay. So even though we're really big, only half of our state is able to be populated. The rest is federal land or state land. So we are big in size, but we're so small in population that we're going to grow. And I think when you have like five people come to, whether it's, you know, Buffalo, that's a change that's noticeable. So when we see the number of houses getting built in town, and you see the number of houses getting built in the county, like in 2020, 2021, and now in 2022, all the local citizens can see that change. You feel that change. You go to the grocery store, you're now standing in line.
Well,
more than you ever used to.
The impact on services generally. Absolutely.
I mean, one, you know, and I don't know how much of this you could take out or cut, but like Dave with the funeral home, I guarantee you he's busier. Ambulance service, I guarantee you he's seeing more business with the ambulance. And I think that's the population that's pushing it, is just that growth. I was talking to, you know, I've tried to talk to lots of people at the dollar store. They notice more busy traffic through the building. I've talked to convenience stores, you know, as far as what they see, and it's busier. It's not so busy that it's really, you know, like a subtle spike.
Mm-hmm.
It's just busier. And I think the citizens know when we're walking around in our own lives and doing our own stuff, we notice it's busier. Maybe not terribly busier, but it's definitely more going on.
And maybe people that you recognize or know less people when you're out and about.
Especially in a small community.
In your daily life.
You can recognize, you know, when you, like we have kids in school, mm-hmm. you know, and when you share the age group with your kids, whether you have an older kid and a second kid that's a little younger, you see the same parents from when they were, mm-hmm. you know, first grade. Well, now you notice different faces. Or you go to the sporting events and you notice different faces at the sporting events from what we historically would recognize. And I try to observe that because that's demographic data that's associated with what my education was.
Sure.
And so I pay attention to the people where we live and how we get by where we live and what's happening where we live. And it's definitely growing. The graph right in front of you is the population graph of the county, and that includes the city, starting in 1880.
And I will pop that up on the post so that people can see what we're referring to there. So, with this desire for people to come, somebody will want to fill the demand for that. Are we going to see more subdivisions and more developments? You getting calls from land developers saying, what can we do in Johnson County? Maybe some more, you know, some parcels and pockets that are more planned, as we're used to seeing in some areas of the city, for example?
We are still getting calls, but economics is playing a heavy toll. And interest rates are 7%, so that is really impacted and affected. And now you compound it with inflation,
mm-hmm.
which are completely out of our control. It's really messed with what's going to happen. As far as the long term, I don't think it's going to slow our state down at all. I think we're still going to continue to see people wanting to come and live here. That's the thing about being the smallest. As far as population.
So as a county planner in one of Wyoming's counties, are you aware of conversations happening amongst county planners and in other counties about managing growth? Johnson County is not the only place that people would like to move into. Wyoming per se is obviously somewhere that is appealing. What are we going to do? What are the conversations that are happening about managing the growth that we may very well be seeing? What is going to happen? Because there is impact on services. There is a question of how we could regulate or control that so the growth is manageable, or what we want to see to retain Wyoming character. What's happening?
Well, each county is kind of seeing a lot of different things. I mean, the northeast corner of Wyoming right now is probably the fastest growing in the whole state, and it's been that way for a couple of years. And that's being, you know, Crook County, Weston County, Campbell County, and Sheridan and Johnson counties. They're seeing a lot of, we're seeing a lot of growth in terms of things that are happening. But when you compare this, let's say, to the Front Range in Colorado, yeah, we're not seeing any growth. Mm-hmm. It's just busy. I mean, it is. Yeah. It's like I talked to a colleague over in Crook County, you know, and we were just comparing septic permitting. Last year, you know, he had permitted 79 septic systems total in the county over there. That was the most they've ever permitted. I permitted 61 here. He was shocked that they had that many more permits than Johnson County.
And so how would that 61 compare to previous years?
That was the most.
Okay.
Even surpassing 2007 and 2008, which were back-to-back 60.
Okay.
We're not there this year, but we're close. And it's not all brand new stuff. That's replacements. You know, those are replacement septic system permits as well, plus new stuff. But I keep track of new replacement, you know, so you can kind of feel for how many new houses have been constructed. And we issue the addressing out of my office, so you kind of see how many addresses are issued compared to how many septic systems got installed. And then now you can connect the dot. Oh, somebody lives in that house.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we kind of pull this together from us. I think in some of the other counties, you know, they have other tools that can allow them to manage. But I think one thing to keep in mind is there's not necessarily a tool that will stop everything and control and keep it the way it is. The world changes every day. Mm-hmm. The sun comes up. It's a different sun from yesterday. So we live in a changing world. I think humans have to remember it's going to change. And how do we roll and go with that change? Or do we go against it and fight what Mother Nature's already doing?
So that is really the question, isn't it? It's how do we manage that change? And Wyoming is appealing partly because it has very little regulation. It allows people to come and manage their own change. What are your opinions about regulation when it comes to Johnson County and what people should be allowed to do on their own properties?
Well, it's a double-bladed sword. And growing up in Wyoming and having the longtime families, you know, that my wife and I have in the state of Wyoming, I'm not necessarily for a bunch of rules. The rules, you know, have brought families to this state. I think there's alternatives that we could look at from a rule standpoint to address the problems that we might have. And I think that's the difference with Wyoming, is we're so small, the state laws were very narrow, so that I think the local jurisdictions, whether it's the city or the county, could kind of spell out what they want to take care of and address what is important for values at that level. So, like, Casper's going to grow. Casper and Cheyenne are going to grow. They're going to be the economic hubs because they always have been. I'm not saying that, you know, we're going to see an economic hub up here, but there have been realtors that have said, you know, this is kind of the new Front Range, which would scare some people. But there was a point in time when Cheyenne was bigger than Denver.
Well, there was a point when Midwest was bigger than Buffalo, I believe. Is that not right?
So what happened? Well, economics. And I think what we need to look at is we need a diversity. A lot of the kids I went to school with, you know, there was always this notion that how are you going to keep the high school students in Wyoming? Well, when there's no jobs, where are they going to go? Mm-hmm. And when there's no education opportunities, where are they going to go? It was said when I went to college in Laramie, it was like an extension of high school. Maybe. Laramie was a really good school, though. It's got a fabulous law school. Mm-hmm. It's right in our own backyard. You don't have to travel across the country to get a good education, necessarily. And I think that's something that's different from maybe 30 years ago, is kids thought, I need to leave Wyoming, and then they may not come back. So one thing that we are noticing with people migrating, some people coming back grew up here. They grew up here and they had to leave because there was no opportunity for jobs. So then they went out, they retired, and now they're coming back.
Okay. So thinking about one of the things that really appeals to people about Wyoming, which is sparse population and the beauty, the majestic beauty of the nature here and so on, when you start dotting dwellings all over it, that changes the character. What do you think we could or should be doing? What are the conversations that we should be having to keep that appeal? Do we put in regulation about what kinds of properties can be built where and when? Skylining, for example, you know, which can really transform a whole vista. With a house stuck on the top of a ridge somewhere, can change the entire vista for somebody and also all their neighbors. Do we have any, what should we be doing about that? Because that also then infringes on one of the things that a lot of people find appealing about Wyoming, which is that basically you're free to do as you see fit, obviously within some
reasons
that I think, you know, by far the majority of us can all agree on. But what should happen with that? Because once the genie's out of the bottle, you can't put it back in. So in the city, for example, it's pretty well regulated about what you can do, where you can do it. There's planning and zoning, and there are ordinances, there are requirements for setbacks, there are building inspections. None of those things apply in the county, do they?
They do.
They do.
Okay. That stuff still applies. Just because you don't have a rule does not mean it doesn't necessarily apply.
So tell us, explain about that, because I think, like, there's a notion that there is no...
When we see subdivisions, we put setbacks on subdivisions all the time.
Okay.
When we see stuff that's going to be alarming from a water or sewer standpoint, we put setbacks. We control all of that stuff. With septic permitting, there's setbacks. I apply the logic of a septic system. If you can't put a septic system right next to the property line, then you probably shouldn't put a house right next to the property line. So I try to get people to think about a leach field location and a house location. And if the leach field has to be 10 feet away from the property line, shouldn't you try to get your house spaced away from your property line as well? In the county, though, we're dealing with people building on ranches, thousands of acres, all the way to 1 acre or smaller. So sometimes building setbacks make no sense. You know, I mean, especially when you start looking at like property line setbacks, and you know they're on a 1,000-acre ranch. The notion of how do you control certain things, I think it's a lot of education. Because that's one of the reasons why it's kind of fun is with this job is trying to get people to understand we do have rules. We don't have zoning. That's the key thing. And zoning controls the land use. It means what you can do with a specific property over another specific property. We cannot control what land use is, but we can control what and how things are built on.
So does that mean that I could develop any business or on my county property that I wanted to without any regulation whatsoever?
No, there's going to be stuff that comes down to play.
Okay.
Got a truck stop going in the county, probably.
Right.
And they got a lot of rules they have to follow.
Okay. So where are those rules coming from?
Well, it's between the state.
Okay.
And the county.
Okay.
So you got state permitting for water. You got state permitting on sewer. You got county permitting on sewer. You've got county permitting for floodplain stuff.
But that's nothing to do with the nature of the business. That's just how safe.
Yep.
Whatever it is to operate. And
but if you don't want the business here, that's where I say land use is not what we can control.
Okay.
And that's the thing.
And economics may drive that.
So what one landowner thinks is a good use, another landowner is not going to think is a good use. We don't regulate that. That's not something that is even a topic of discussion right now. But if, like, for example, somebody wants to build a meat processing center, there's a lot of rules that would apply to a meat processing center. Across the board, water, sewer, electrical, and fire.
And health and safety standards, yep. And because you're handling food products,
and then the
et
other thing that we joke about with some of the electrical inspectors at the state level is the fact that there is building codes at the state level that have been adopted that builders still have to abide by.
Okay, so let's talk about building inspection, because if you want to, there are a number of things that the city requires, and they have a designated building inspector who goes out regularly, and there's a permitting process, and so on. Is that the same in the county?
No.
Okay.
So we don't have building codes that are locally adopted and enforced. We'd have to have zoning first.
So does that mean that let's say a new home was built by a construction company of some sort. They're not being inspected regularly by anybody as those things are going in. That means it's kind of buyer beware, does it?
That's Wyoming.
Okay.
There's a state law for buyer beware.
Okay.
But the builder still has to follow the 2012 building code.
Okay. Who is checking on that?
Well, that's a buyer beware.
Okay.
So if you've hired a contractor to build your house, now it's your authority.
Okay. But you may not know that there's a problem until after there is a devastating
problem.
So
I've referred a lot of people to building inspectors or mm-hmm. engineering firms mm-hmm. or things like that that they can fall onto. But in essence, is it the government's responsibility?
Okay.
That's the big question that comes down to. You know, so when we get to the question of, like, how do I personally feel about permitting and rules? Well, at some point in time, is it the government's responsibility? Or is there mm-hmm. person responsibility in there? And that's a lot of what we're seeing happening in the nation right now that is pushing people to Wyoming. You have a lot of places that are getting so regulatory on the person and what the person wants to do. And again, is it the government's position to dictate, or is that a personal decision of what and how things are done on your own property? So I let people know. I just had one the other day. There's a house. It's under construction. It's an existing house. They're reconstructing and doing all kinds of things. And the landowner's like, I'm really worried about this. What can I do? Hold your builder accountable.
Mm-hmm.
You're paying him. Don't you? I mean, if you're paying him to do a good job for you, well, then you should be able to pay to make sure that that's a good job. My wife and I bought several properties in our marriage. I hired electricians to inspect my electrical. I hired plumbers to inspect my plumbing. I hired structural engineers to evaluate the structural safety and integrity of the house. I never hired a building inspector. I hired the people that I wanted to look at the things that would protect what I need. And I think that's the difference. I think that puts the responsibility on the citizen.
Okay, thank you. And so we've talked a lot about what a person can build. What happens if it's your neighbor that's built something next to you that you don't care for? Or that they're developing something that wasn't there that you didn't anticipate happening. That's just the way the cookie crumbles. Is that?
Well, it's always fun. That's been a good topic and another good question. So two things. If your neighbor is doing something and you don't necessarily like it, the question comes up, was the property for sale? And why didn't you buy it?
Well, you may not have been able to afford to buy it. You may have really wanted it.
Maybe, but that's always the option, is that, you know, expect your neighbors to do something. And I think that's kind of the thing. If you've seen a vacant field next to you, expect that vacant field to have a house on it. I mean, human nature is human nature. If the property came up for sale and you don't want anything going on it, buy it. If it's not feasible, buy it. Otherwise, it's going to have something that you don't want. And if you don't control it, you won't know. If your neighbor decides, or like I decided to do something and my neighbors didn't like it, what's the remedy? Are there civil covenants that would prohibit what I'm doing? If so, those are civil.
And so what is a civil covenant? Can you explain what they are?
It applies to the private land, and it's like a contract between the land and the owner of the land and whoever's under those covenants. So if it's multiple lands, it would apply to everybody. And that means, so if you have a covenant that says you can't build a single-family house, and you built a single-family house at all, you know, the landowner who are under those civil covenants, enforce the covenants. Take him to court and challenge him or her. And because that's the protection that we have right now. And I know of a couple of situations where covenants caused people to have to tear stuff down. They can be serious. Civil covenants can be very, very... I mean, I watched somebody one time, and this is in the past, somebody did a subdivision and the covenants prohibited it. And they sued in court. Went all the way to the Supreme Court down in Cheyenne. And they won. And they had to undo the subdivision.
Oh, my Lord.
I watched somebody put a house in. The covenants did not allow the house they put in. They took them to court. A judge ruled the house had to be tore down.
So the message is, read that fine print, that contract, read that covenant.
There was something my parents raised me by. If you're going to be dumb, you better be tough. And if you're going to take on the bull, remember, there's probably horns. Mm-hmm. So be careful. And the last one was, if you're going to wrestle with a pig, you better be ready to get dirty, because mm-hmm. pigs get dirty and they like it.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you for that. That family advice. So, just one question before we wrap up, Jim. We talked a lot about how the first wave of homesteading, and how people came. They were taking fairly large tracts of land and developing them. And they became family properties, and families have grown, and we're now seeing second, third, even fourth, fifth generations. Those ranches, you know, will be inherited potentially by multiple family members. What is happening there? Are these ranches going to be split up, and what are we going to see with that? What is the impact of that going to be in Johnson County, do you think?
Oh, that's a rough one. I think with all of like our Centurion ranches and farms throughout the community in Johnson County and just in the state in Wyoming, I'm really kind of worried about it, to be honest with you, because these are homesteads. If you think about it, if it's a Centurion ranch or farm, you're probably dealing with the original homesteader family. They've passed it on, which means they had a vested interest in the next generation below to take over. And what they're seeing nationwide across the board, youth are not wanting to be farmers and ranchers. So what does that mean with the long-term family farm and ranch? I don't know. I think we're going to see more places split up. Now the other dynamic that I've thought about in terms of what's happening from a demographic point of view is, you know, people are coming to Wyoming, they're coming to Johnson County, and they want to buy like that 35-acre parcel or the 40-acre parcel. And so maybe it was part of a larger ranch unit that maybe they grazed, you know, 300 cows over a course of 3,000 acres or something. And now that 3,000 acres is, you know, a hodgepodge of 160 acres here and 80 acres here. I like to think that human nature, the people that acquire those, are still going to do something agricultural. They're still going to maintain the sense of open space. I like to think that that's human nature, and those good decisions are still going to come. Because the ranches, as they sit in big blocks of property, ranchers put fences up to control livestock, but the animals, the wildlife, they understand where and how they can navigate and migrate across all the ranch land. But as we have the ranch land get split up and subdivided, smaller, fences go in and fences go in. And then it disrupts and it modifies animal behavior and where animals migrate or how animals move. And so I think in the long run, that is probably the biggest concern that I see, is the disruption to the wild behavior of where we live. We love our wildlife. We love to watch. I don't know how far where you can see, but I know people look at the face of the mountain and watch the wildlife move all over the face.
Well, there were many people recently saw a large herd of elk up by Shell Creek and Mead Creek, just really very close to the Interstate 2, and that's an unusual, stunning, and an amazing, magnificent sight if you've ever been fortunate enough to see it. But that speaks to what you're talking about right now, I think.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't too long ago, just kind of thinking about that, and I remember Wyandotte had to put a sign up on I-90 north, you know, on the north end of the county, for people to watch elk. Mm-hmm. It wasn't watch the wildlife. No, they were specifically saying the elk are moving across the interstate from the other side to the other side. They had to do the same thing down here south of Buffalo a couple of years ago. The elk had migrated across I-25, got over on the other east side of I-25. Well, it's not just one elk. It's a herd. It's a whole herd. And then last, it was about 2017, there was a moose walking from over by Duffy's Bluff, you know, Duffy's on the bypass, and he walked across that pasture before those storage units went in there and was grazing underneath the big sign for the exit to get off on Highway 16. And it was like about 5 o'clock at night, and he had just come off the creek, somehow came into town, walked over, and then was hanging out over in the Heritage Park. And I got worried when I saw him, you know, saw this, because it wasn't a very big old, you know, very old bull. He was pretty young. He didn't have, I mean, he had just a little tiny rack, you know, and I was like, if that hits a car, or a car, you know, a car, it's going to hurt somebody. Because it's a moose, it's not like a deer.
Well, and there was fairly recently, there was a significantly sized bear in the cemetery. If you were just a human person, it seemed a fairly large bear. So yeah, exactly, I mean, and I think...
So as we grow, that is a change that's coming.
We're going to see some differences.
But it's like, I don't know, you know, you can have this too. This is just a map of... just showing, you know, Buffalo and then north to the Sheridan County line and all the purple areas, you know, this is where the, quote, platted subdivisions are that we've seen platted. There's a couple of areas that aren't included. This is a large acreage one, 35-plus acres. But when you see the gray lines, those are the parcels, and you can see how densely created some of them are. So, like, this was a large ranch.
Okay.
2 years ago.
Thank you for pointing those things out to us. And Jim, thank you so much for spending some time talking about the challenges and the opportunities that growth brings to us. I hope we can talk again. I'd like to talk to you about sage grouse, Lake de Smet, There are many issues, and of course, we'll be watching what happens to help us all with some property tax relief too, and that will also have an impact as well, I believe, on county planning.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jim Waller, thank you very much indeed for your time. I appreciate it very much and look forward to visiting with you again.
Okay.